Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
All right, Brandon, we had fallout tonight on Raw from Clash at the Castle. A lot of highlights from the event. I think giving people who didn't see the event at least a sense, it was a very big deal. We didn't get much in the way of follow-up to the title, the major title that Raw represents both Raw and SmackDown, and that is Drew McIntyre coming up short against Roman Reigns. We didn't get much on that, but that's understandable, all things considered. But we did get perhaps a new contender for that title in the form of Braun Strowman making his return. That's probably the headline out of this show with a few other contenders. What do you think about the return of Braun to the mix? Where do you think he fits in, and what does the way that they reintroduced him tell you about his future?
Man, I guess I'm sort of indifferent about Braun Strowman returning to the company in general. I've never been the biggest fan of Braun, and I think there have been times when I found him entertaining and I've enjoyed his work. I was seeing people post sort of different things that he's done on Twitter, and some of the stuff I had forgotten about, and some of it is like, man, looking back, I think more than anything, I enjoyed that run that he had in the Mixed Match Challenge with Alexa Bliss. I thought that was a lot of fun. He's never been my type of wrestler, and I think some of the things that he said on social media have been very off-putting to me, and so I've just never been a big fan of the guy. With that being said, I think that he's a fine depth piece for Raw or SmackDown, wherever he ends up, and I don't necessarily mind him being a potential challenger for Roman Reigns at a show. I certainly don't see him as being the guy who is going to dethrone Roman, nor do I think he should be. Biggest piece of news for me coming out of this, though, I really disliked that segment, virtually everything about it. I just thought that it was hearkening back to everything that I disliked about the way that Vince McMahon was booking. It felt like it could have been a Vince McMahon segment. I mean, you could run down the list kind of things that I feel like went wrong there. You introduce a four-way tag team number one contenders match with no hype, no build, involving four teams that we've been shown have no reason to be competing for the tag team titles. I mean, New Day just lost decisively to the Viking Raiders multiple times, the most recent one being just this past Friday. We haven't seen Los Lotharios, aside from some backstage segments, in months. The Street Profits just wrapped up a feud with the Usos, and no one is taking Chad Gable and Otis seriously. So to present this as a number one contenders match for the rejuvenated tag team titles just seemed like a really weak match to begin with. And then you quickly found out why they booked those four teams. It was so they could blow the whole thing up with the return of Braun Strowman. So it just sent all the wrong messages. You have undeserving teams competing for a tag team title shot with titles that you just reestablished the importance of. You bring out a new star and instantly say that he is more important than the entire tag team division. He runs through them with ease and leaves just a path of destruction in his wake. I just thought this was just the worst of Vince McMahon style booking, and it was really disappointing to see it on a Triple H show.
I agree with everything you said. I was bummed out. You know, we've had a good run of Triple H eliminating a lot of irritants and bad habits and annoying things that Vince McMahon did, and treating the tag team division, including, by the way, Montez Ford was in that mix, and he's a potential future top single star. And I know, God, I mean, think about what Edge went through, you know, losing 2-on-1 to Kane or Undertaker, and I think it was Undertaker in a 2-on-1 match, circa whatever, 2000-something, and you know, at the time, I remember commenting, you know, this is going to hurt Edge, and it's a setback. And Edge has done fine, but it's it's not helpful. And I don't think it's necessary. I think there's ways you can get Braun Strowman over without sacrificing four tag teams at once. And, you know, the caveat maybe Paul Levesque would put forth here, or one of the writers, if they were defending this decision, would be, well, the teams were just in a grueling tag match beating each other up, and they caught Braun caught them unsuspecting. But still, you know what I mean? It's just, why are we cheering for a guy who broke up a match in progress? So there's no, and some people are going to kind of like, you know, snicker at this idea, but like the sanctity of competition should count for something, you know, like why would we cheer a babyface monster for ruining a match? You know, like they're fighting for a reason. They're trying to prove they're contenders for titles. And he had a complete disregard for that.
Yeah, including babyfaces who are over acts too. I mean,
exactly,
like,
yeah.
You shouldn't really be cheering the formal beatdown of the Street Profits and New Day. I mean, even if you could completely set aside a moment for, like, completely set aside the sort of just beatdown of these various tag teams that they really need to keep the division strong, you also just – if you come at it from a booking standpoint, it just brings back all of the bad Vince McMahon style booking where matches don't matter. Because if you notice, as soon as the destruction ensued, the announcers never made mention of the fact that there was a number one contendership match going on. They were just concerned with Braun Strowman beating everybody up. So we have no number one contenders for the tag team titles. They didn't announce another match for next week so we could get proper number one contenders. They just forgot all about it. So you're led to believe then that this match was nothing more than a prop, which means the titles are nothing more than a prop.
Yeah, I it's a bummer to have that as the major factor coming out of this show, coming out of a good, really good pay-per-view on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a good, solid episode of Raw in a lot of ways. And to have that sort of be a dark cloud over the return of Braun Strowman. And yes, I mean, there's the personal side of Braun Strowman. There's his social media accounts. You know, there's people in WWE who will tell you that they don't like to get cornered. I shouldn't say cornered literally, but like, you know, you know, like everyone's looking to like refresh their drinks when Braun starts talking to him. I'll put it that way. And so, you know, there's going to be a little bit of eye rolling that he's brought back. But, you know, I get Paul Levesque wanting to do everything he can to make it, even if he has to, you know, plug his nose a little bit. And I'm not saying he is with Braun, but just, you know, in a general sense, doing some things that he thinks can spark business to quell any concern from networks and advertisers and fans that without Vince McMahon, things are kind of dry or not exciting. He wants to get off to a good start. And I'm not against the idea of bringing people back or calling people up or repositioning people, including Braun, because I get the circumstances. But, you know, I mean, even setting aside the tag team thing, I'm not saying Braun needed to reinvent himself, but, you know, I am sort of bracing for rerun season when it comes to Braun, you know, tipping big things over, you know, talking like a monster and, you know, plowing through people. It's fine. I mean, it's formula. It'd be nice to see some complexity or layering to his character to make it a little more interesting than the segment you want to bring your 8-year-old nephew or son in to watch or daughter in to watch because you want them to like wrestling and you think this is something that'll catch their eye. And that's kind of what Braun is.
Oh yeah. I think the first thing that I thought when I heard that there was a possibility that he would be returning was that it would be good for the house show business. And WWE doesn't run a lot of those these days, but during the height of Braun's run, I would say like, you know, 2016 through 2018, 2019 or so, when he was really heavily featured on a consistent regular basis, and he was a big part of the weekly shows with his feuds with Roman and whatnot, I was attending a good number of WWE house shows. They were, for whatever reason during that time period, I don't know if it just happened to be because of scheduling or because of the way that the crowds were turning out, but they were hitting Maine pretty frequently during that time. And I'd always go just because it was, you know, it wasn't particularly far and I would just go and check out the show. And Braun Strowman was almost always on those shows and consistently one of, if not the most over guy on the card. even more so than Roman Reigns. I think people just loved the attraction of seeing Braun come out there and do big power moves and throw somebody through a table. And that's more often than not exactly what he did.
And I think that's what we're going to see from him. I mean, he looked like he was in, you know, good shape. And
yeah.
I mean, hopefully, I hope he has good matches. And I mean, I don't think his promo should be like out of character, but you know, it'd be nice under Paul Levesque if there's some ideas with Levesque and the writing team to make him, you know, a slightly more complex, compelling overall character, or like an actual like person, I guess, someone who comes across as a person.
He definitely, I mean, I definitely agree. He strikes me as someone who would, his character in particular, yeah. I think would benefit from sort of sporadic appearances. Like you bring him in for an angle and you get what you need out of the angle for a couple months, and then you just send him home for a month or 2 months and bring him back when the next thing makes sense. I think that overexposure with a guy of his size, with his style, you just grow desensitized to what he does, and then it all just feels kind of lukewarm.
Yeah, I think that's fair. All right, well, we got a lot more to talk about on this show, including the Miz challenge of Bobby Lashley in a cage match with, spoiler alert, Dexter Lumis getting involved, saving Bobby Lashley's U.S. title. Who knew that Dexter Lumis would save Bobby Lashley from losing his U.S. title on September 5th, 2022? So we'll get to that. Johnny Gargano's promo, Austin Theory getting his name back, Kevin Owens maybe referencing CM Punk in his promo. We'll talk about that and much more. So let's introduce the show and get on to the other segments. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Monday, September 5th, 2022. And I am Wade Keller, the editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter and the website pwtorch.com, and the host of many podcasts in the Torch Network, including this, the Wade Keller Post Show, along with the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast. And by the way, speaking of CM Punk, Nick Houseman from Wrestling Inc., the managing editor at Wrestling Inc., will for the first time ever be my guest co-host on the flagship tomorrow. He was the spark that lit the fire at the AEW media Q&A following All Out last night. And we're going to get his side of that story, what he was thinking when CM Punk interrupted him as he's about to ask a question, as he does at all these Q&As. And he's a regular at the post-AEW pay-per-view scrums. And what went through his mind, what his history with Punk and Cabana is, and then just, you know, get to the more broader sense that's not directly related to him, which is his insights in comparing notes with him on a really, really crazy 24 hours here post-AEW. I do want to note, too, we got a special 30-minute Wade Keller hotline for VIP members and our Patreon supporters up with a full rundown of everything I knew by mid-afternoon, and I have been texting and messaging and calling and talking on the phone with tons of people and getting a lot of different opinions. And then I also recorded a 70-minute episode of the VIP podcast, Everything with Rich and Wade, right before Raw, with even more details and more insights that I had gathered since the Wade Keller Hotline, and also that Rich had picked up on, and including some social media insights, including Kevin Owens coming up, which we'll get into. So go VIP. It's a great time. We've had a lot of people sign up today just because of all this, and you shouldn't be left out. Some good coverage and some good insights, and we'll have more as the week goes on. The way to go VIP or just get more information on it is pwtorch.com/goVIP. But yeah, Nick Houseman tomorrow. If you have questions, by the way, or comments in reaction to the CM Punk Young Bucks backstage fight, the CM Punk venting session, well, Tony Khan, his boss, sat there rather helplessly. And also a steal, I mean, everything. I mean, there's a Hangman page, all that stuff. Email us, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. That's wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. And we'll get to some of your emails tomorrow when we record the flagship. You can look for that on Tuesday night on the Blue Logo Show. So search Wade Keller on your podcast app and subscribe for free to the Red Logo Show, and then the main podcast feed, the Blue Logo Show, and you'll have access to that tomorrow night. And VIP members get the ad-free version of it, often with VIP extra or VIP exclusive after shows. So with all that said, we got a lot more to talk about returning Raw. And the other voice you hear is Brandon LeClaire, who joined Todd Martin and me for, speaking of VIP, the VIP exclusive roundtable following WWE Clash at the Castle. It's great to have him back. He did a great job on Saturday night analyzing the event and picking up on things that I didn't notice or I wanted to thought to bring up. So that's something everybody listening can catch up on if they go VIP. You can also then download the post AEW All Out roundtable with Todd Martin and Rich Fan, who joined me for the roundtable for an hour and a half of analysis of the event and also real-time reaction to the scrum as it aired in the background on our screens and as we got texted and messaged by people going, are you watching this? Are you watching this? You won't believe what was just said. And all kinds of facial expressions from Tony Khan making us wonder what was being said. So it's been a really big weekend, and it's a great time to go VIP. I say that because, you know, I'm a businessman, and I want more customers. I also say, because if you're listening to the show, I really, really think you're going to like our coverage and how we approach stories like this. So it's self-interested, but it's also, like, genuine. I really think you'll like it, and we appreciate your support. Okay, Brandon, welcome.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks so much for having me. Glad to be back. And it's been a crazy weekend. I have been at the desk for so much of it. Of course, covering Clash at the Castle and doing the post-show VIP roundtable with you and Todd, and then covering AEW All Out last night. And of course, from my perspective over here, you guys, of course, went live with the VIP roundtable, and I, just because of the rapid fire pace of that show, had paused a couple of times and was probably about like 10 to 15 minutes behind by the time the show got done. So I'm just wrapping up my report for PWTorch.com, and I flip over to Twitter, and things are exploding. And I, at this point, like, I am exhausted. It's probably like, it was like. I think it was pushing 1 a.m. here on the East Coast, and I was planning on going to bed, so I sauntered upstairs, I got into bed, and Twitter's still going crazy, and I'm like, ah, all right, I got to throw on this press conference. And then before you know it, it's 3 a.m., and I'm still watching Tony Khan talk to Chris Jericho, so.
Oh, yes. What a time to be a pro wrestling fan who is engaged at this level. You know,
and to think, Wade, this would be the biggest wrestling story of the year. And then you remember, oh, yeah, Vince McMahon was forced to retire just about a month and a half ago.
Yeah, you know, I also think we'll get back to Rodman here. I also think Wardlow was upset that MJF stole his thunder. You know, like all this controversy, you know, Wardlow squashed him, but it wasn't really a showcase match. I think Wardlow would have rather had more of a give and take and lengthy, more memorable match that showed he could work and really milk the emotions. But instead, either out of punishment to MJF, legit, or to try to sell the idea that Tony Khan in a meta way was punishing him, it was a quick squash. And then you had Wardlow just, you know, with the story being about MJF afterwards, not getting a big momentum out of this long buildup. And he talked about that publicly. And I think he's got, you know, he's made good points. Well, if Wardlow got Punk all worked up to do this, and I'm totally making this up, but I wouldn't blame him. Like, now Punk has stolen all of MJF's thunder. This master plan, you know, weeks, months, however long this return of MJF was planned, nobody's talking about, well, not nobody, you know, like MJF, the talk about MJF's return is so much less because of what Punk said in his venting in the backstage fight. So, you know, Wardlow might be going, ah, piece of his own medicine. You're right though. The big stories that just could have come out of this weekend, you know, they're still there and we'll be talking about them this week, but the immediate conversation has shifted to so many fascinating aspects, you know, the Punk history, his personality, what drives him to be this way. Is it good? Is it bad? Tony Khan's reaction. I have a great screenshot of the press conference up at pwtorch.com. I hope people, if they read my news article on the backstage fight and the details on that, there's a photo of Punk mid-rant in Tony Khan, the expression on his face, I just think summarizes his feelings about how this was spinning out of control or the overall grim view of what's going on in his locker room and the problems he was dealing with. And I get into a lot of trying to figure out what Tony was thinking during all of this and what he thought going in. in those audio shows I talked about. Anyway, Brandon, like I said, we should be talking.
I think you should try to get a special VIP Torch podcast with a body language expert. Just to watch the promo, the entire press conference in full, because man, Tony Khan experiences every single emotion imaginable in those 20 something minutes that Punk is up there. And I watched it again, and it's so there's just so much going on with Punk too, because even when he's not trying to be ornery, he is in a mood when somebody suggests the idea, or Tony actually suggests the idea, that maybe they do the MJF match at Arthur Ashe Stadium. Punk just gives the biggest eye roll you could ever imagine.
And why?
I know.
I think that was Eric Kroll representing the Torch at the media scrum who brought that up. And I it was a totally fair question. And it seemed like, you know, I think the proper answer is wait and see. You know, that's what Dynamite's for. Tune in to see. Yeah. And by the way, as far as Tony Khan's facial expressions go, when he's involved in reacting on camera during a clear on-air promo, that's, you know, all work. He also really emotes a lot.
Yeah.
You know, so it's hard, when you watch him, it's kind of hard to tell. Is he emoting because he kind of knew this was coming, but he wants to pretend it's a surprise? And then it doesn't go to, okay, I knew he was going to say that. I didn't know he was going to say that. And you're trying to figure out where is that break point, if there was one, where Punk's, you know, telling Tony, and I get into this on the hotline, you know, be prepared, I'm going to vent on this. You okay with it? Tony's like, yeah, you need to have your say. Okay, great. But I don't think Tony counted on Punk cutting him off and telling him to, you know, basically shut up and let me talk, boss, and I'm trying to run a business here. It's like Tony's like, oh, okay, it's my fault. Like, yeah. So
you can almost hear him, like, as he goes through the emotions in his head, and it's like, yep, okay, yep, uh-huh, yep. And he's sort of agreeing and getting there, and then it's like, oh. There's just so much. There's so much to unpack, and I mean, obviously, we're going to be talking about this for a very, very long time, and there is so much more to come. I mean, the implications of everything that happened afterwards. I mean, Ace Steel biting someone. Where do you even begin?
As you are talking, I got a text from somebody giving me the blow-by-blow of what he heard, but did not eyewitness, but he knows an eyewitness, what he heard happened, who threw the first ball, all that stuff. And I'm, you know, I have to verify this before I get into detail, because I'm, as I said in my news report, like, I'm hearing a lot and a lot overlaps, but, you know, I feel like this is because of even the legal implications of what really happened. You know, you have to be careful with this. But, yeah, I'm getting, like, literally right now, kind of the blow-by-blow of what happened, who got involved, a name that hasn't been mentioned yet who was involved. It's just, it's crazy. Go VIP. I'll be keeping everybody up to date. It's all I've been doing is trying to find out what's going on with this story. And I've been trying to, I have been talking to friends and colleagues of the Bucks and Hangman and Punk who have known them for years, sometimes decades, getting psychoanalysis insight into the personality clash here and what's caused this to happen and is there a history to it. And that's where the Kevin Owens thing comes in a little bit, which I hope we remember to get to. It's wild. Okay. There's people who only like WWE and are like enjoying this because they're like, yeah, self-destruction of the enemy. And there's also people who only want to talk about Raw. And they're like, okay, move on. I'll go VIP and listen. Let's talk about Raw. So we'll do that. Our phone number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad, and that plays you on the switchboard, and that lets us know that you want to be on the show. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. As Brandon alluded to, his report and my report on Clash of the Castle are posted at pwtorch.com. His report and my report, two separate reports, two separate perspectives, different analysis on the matches. You can get two thorough rundowns of what happened at pwtorch.com, also on All Out from last night. So go check that out at pwtorch.com. All right. Deep breath, and we will go to phone calls. And again, you can chime in at any point as the show progresses. We'd love to continue to hear from more people as we progress here. We're going to start with Brad in New York. Brad, good to hear from you. What'd you think of Raw tonight?
Hey, Wade. Hey, Brandon. Thanks for taking the call. So a couple things. First of all, you know, you guys alluded to it. I really did not understand the Braun Strowman coming in part, only because, you know, I would have gotten it if he came in, for instance, during the Theory KO match or, you know, even the Steel Cage match at the end. You know, I want to settle this or I want the U.S. Championship. Like, what does he have to do with the tag team division? And I'm just really surprised that Triple H did something so nonsensical like that with him because, you know, he's not going to be part of a tag team, I would imagine. If he had some mystery partner with him, okay, I could see why that would happen. But there was no score to settle. There was no reason for it. So, again, didn't understand that at all. Really made no sense. You guys touched upon it a little bit. Secondly, the Edge segment at the beginning of the show I thought was really compelling and really well done. Like, we just couldn't take our eyes off it, my family and I. That was just one of those segments that you just watched and, like, you didn't want to glance at your phone. You didn't want to glance at your iPad. You didn't want whatever. Like, it was just one of those segments that was so well done, I thought. You know, with Ray and then Dominic coming out, that whole thing was great to me. And then finally, on the Bobby Lashley and Miz steel cage match at the end, you know, if I'm Miz, see, like, I thought we were going to be doing things that made more sense in the future, like that, you know, maybe gave it a little bit more of a sports or a realism component. And I have no major problem with the way it ended, but if I'm the Miz, I don't say, oh, wow, I got to climb back in this cage. I'm saying I'm jumping 10 feet onto this guy's face and stomping him and killing him, you know? So I thought, you know, Miz had the championship won, and I just thought that was a really, really silly way of ending it. And where was Ciampa? I mean, I understand he got hit in with the door of the steel cage kind of towards the end, maybe 4 or 5 minutes before the match ended. But, like, for him to be out for 7 minutes from that when we just saw Bobby Lashley getting nailed with the steel cage over and over again, then he's spearing people, and he's climbing things. So I just didn't kind of understand the logic behind the end of that match. And Wade, I did send you an email regarding something VIP, so I'm hoping to get it, and you could respond to me at some point. But, yeah, just those points.
Good, yep. I just saw you that you messaged, so in the inbox here. Brandon, I'll throw to you first on that, and in particular, the decision to have Miz be too scared to jump down onto Dexter as a way to give up winning the U.S. title to avoid whatever he feared Dexter, you know, in theory, would do to him.
Yeah, that moment stood out to me, too, not even because of the point that you made, which I do think is definitely a good one, but because I was surprised that they sort of gave the Miz a visual win. I mean, it looked certainly, for all intents and purposes, that had Dexter Lumis not conveniently slid out from underneath the ring, that the Miz could have climbed over the cage and won the U.S. title. And yes, it would have been because of some, you know, involvement from Tommaso Ciampa, but still, I mean, at the end of the day, a win is a win in WWE, and that would have been a victory over Bobby Lashley. So I was a little surprised they did that because they have been going in so strongly on protecting Lashley. But yeah, it certainly does defy logic, and I think that the reason why a lot of this stuff is standing out to people is because for the last, you know, better part of month and a half, this stuff hasn't been happening. And tonight they got a little loose with some things. I mean, obviously we've talked about the Braun Strowman situation, which I already expressed my disappointment and frustration with. I thought that it harkened back to Vince McMahon style booking, and this kind of creaked into that territory as well. I think it's more excusable sort of generic pro wrestling booking than it is like a Vince McMahonism, the way I found the Bobby Lashley, the Braun Strowman thing to be. But I do still think that Triple H should be running a tighter ship logically. And yeah, I mean, it's certainly a good point. I mean, there is no conceivable reason that The Miz couldn't have just jumped down onto Loomis or just climbed down or started to move to the left or to the right. I mean, Miz is going to be the one jumping, using his momentum to get off the cage. He's going to have a head start on Loomis pulling his body from underneath the ring. So there isn't really any reason to think that Miz couldn't have gotten down from the cage, either, you know, landed on Loomis and injured him, or landed around Loomis and escaped him with the U.S. title.
All right, Brad, I will say, under normal circumstances, I would be very unforgiving of a wrestler sacrificing their well-being, not risking their well-being in order to just get a title shot, especially when you have the chance to jump onto somebody's face and chest from a high place. What could go wrong? I will say, I think WWE gets a little bit of slack because of the psychological warfare that Dexter Lumis is playing on Miz. We don't know what Dexter has been doing to Miz off camera, and Miz is blocking it out now, talking about it, doesn't want to talk about it. I could imagine the sort of trauma based on the story they're telling could cause Miz to go, I'm taking no chances, I want to win a different way, and I'll give him a little bit more slack. The pre-match beatdown and then, just throw him in the ring and ring the bell bothers me. I know it's like, it's a cage match, no rules, but to me that makes a mockery out of championships, makes a mockery out of the rules. So that bothered me probably more than the finish, given the circumstances. Even if you have the out going, there's no rules in a cage match. It's just, you can take it to an absurd level where it makes a mockery of things. But Brad, back to you for any reaction to any of that, or you can change topics.
Yeah, Wade, that what you just said, and I do understand, you know, what you're getting at with the psychological aspect and how terrified he's been of Loomis and why he would kind of just say, I'm staying away from this guy entirely. But I think he just could have done it if I was a writer there, in a more effective way. You know, maybe you have the ref get knocked out by a Lashley spear or something like that, or the ref's down on the ground. Loomis climbs the cage, he's in the ring, and then you have, you know, some sort of weird situation with that where, you know, to me, I think you go for the championship and you land on the guy's head. You know, that's like your best chance to injure this guy, but he was in a very vulnerable situation. But, I did think, you know, Theory, I'm sure, will catch some flack for saying Crown Jewel by accident. And then he said, Clash at the Castle. Shut up, you idiots, you know. But, you know, look, those things happen. I mean, he was also playing up the jaw. And maybe, I don't know if maybe that was incidental or if that was truly a mistake that he caught vertically, or if it was something where he's playing up, like, I kind of have this sort of jaw, head injury, I'm not thinking straight from the punch from Tyson Fury. I don't know, but I'm sure he'll catch some flack for making that mistake. And, I thought the show was pretty good. You know, I really didn't like the Bayley promo at all when they were in the ring and, you know, how great they are. And why they earned the title shot, I guess, is because of the pin, the incorrect pin of Dakota Kai. Is that correct?
Brandon?
Yes. I believe so, yeah. Dakota Kai was not legal. So I think the argument is essentially that Raquel and Aaliyah's title win was invalid. I mean, she pinned the illegal woman.
Right. Okay. So there you go. So yeah. I guess that explains why they're getting that title shot. I mean, listen, I don't think it was like a great episode, but I thought it was pretty good and okay. Again, just the thing with Braun Strowman coming back, why not have him interject in that cage match or in the Austin Theory match? Why do you guys think that was? Like just to destroy everyone in the ring and make a big scene? Like, I don't want to make you guys keep rehashing it, but I feel like it was the biggest thing that happened tonight and just something that logically makes no sense. I think you interject him in some sort of single situation, and that was just very puzzling to me. But I can't wait to listen to the rest of the show. I'll let you guys get on to other things, and thanks as always for the time and for taking the call.
Sure thing, Brad. Thanks. Anything you want to add to anything you said there, Brent?
Yeah, a couple of things. The Strowman situation, it felt to me like they wanted the largest impact from a pure aesthetic standpoint. They were less concerned with the idea of interjecting Strowman into a major storyline and more interested in reintroducing him and having him cause a bunch of destruction because that's what he's known for. And the easiest way to cause a bunch of destruction on a WWE TV show is to interrupt a multi-person match and beat up a bunch of people that they don't really have any plans for. So that's exactly what they did. And I certainly don't agree with that method. And I think we talked about why it didn't work and why it was so disappointing. But yeah, I think that was the idea there. I also want to touch on the Austin Theory thing, because that was maybe to me the second most noteworthy piece of this show. I don't know if you have a better handle on what they were going for there, but I couldn't quite figure out if it was purposeful in the sense that Theory was sort of flubbing his lines on purpose because he was selling a head injury or a jaw, a dislocated jaw or whatever. He was selling the punch from Tyson Fury, or if he was just sort of having an off night and was just completely like sort of out of it, because the reason I sort of started wondering is because it didn't seem to me like they would okay that Crown Jewel line. So it seemed like that was a genuine mistake. But then when he kept messing up lines afterward, I thought like, okay, is he now in his own head? And this is just happening because he caught himself in the mistake and now he's in his own head and he's messing up other lines, or was it planned that way? Was he selling the injury?
Say that last part again.
Did you get the sense that he may have flubbed the line about Crown Jewel?
Gotcha. Yeah.
And yep. and then sort of.
I thought the reason I got confused, I was thinking when he first was getting his stammering on his words, but not saying the wrong thing,
right?
I was like, oh, he's losing his train of thought. The fans are going to get on him. And then when he did it again, and this wasn't the Crown Jewel part, and he's like, would grab his jaw. I was like, that's really smart. Like, if he's kind of messing up his lines
right.
a little bit, you know, oh, totally. But I can't even talk because of my jaw. I don't know about the Crown Jewel thing. I mean, I don't think it's going to be that big of a deal. Although, if he was thinking, I'm going to blame my jaw for everything, and maybe some misspeaks were on purpose, or the second one was, he could have also just said, you know, no matter what happened last night or this weekend at King of the Ring, I'm sorry, Clash of the Cat. Like, he could have just gone with it even more to play up the idea that he was, although I don't know if, I think if they were to frown on any aspect of it, they'd frown on the idea that he was giving the impression he might have a concussion. Although,
yeah.
He wasn't in a match tonight. So
the whole thing just felt strange because like he flubs some lines, he was mixing up some words, then he throws out the Crown Jewel line, and then he messes up and trips over Money in the Bank. And then of course Kevin Owens used it in his promo. So then I'm kind of thinking like, okay, did they have an outline for this? But then would they have given the okay for Crown Jewel? Because it just seems like they're so adamant about not drawing attention to that show. And I think that because they were overseas, you know, in the UK, I think the last thing that you want to do is draw comparisons between those two events.
Totally. Totally. Okay. Let's keep going here. We've got, Matt in Delaware up next. Matt, thanks for calling. What's your note about Raw tonight?
I thought it was all right. You know, I'll be honest with you. When I first heard that they were bringing Strowman back, I wasn't too excited about it, and I thought that physically he looked like a lot different. I thought he was presenting a lot better. Now I hear you guys on the, you know, destroying four tag teams and a division that they're trying to rehab. But at the same time, the tag teams involved in that match, other than Alpha Academy, have all been defeated by the Usos anyway. And so it is kind of like a presentation where you got a match where it's like, well, one of these four teams is actually going to be number one contender, and then he comes in there. But at the same time, I do think that, you know, having all those guys out there is sort of a good way to put him over as a monster, to reintroduce him, much like they would sort of put over somebody like Kane as a monster. But I also see where you're coming from as far as just totally decimating those four teams in the tag team division. But I think that in the tag team division as a whole, like, it's got to be some other team that's going to be challenging the Usos coming up here. But where I'm going with this is, if not introduce him this way, what other ways do you think that they could have done it?
Yeah, well, I mean, one, you could have Braun Strowman show up and just talk and declare his intent. You could sacrifice somebody coming out to interrupt him who he beats up. I'm not looking at the roster in front of me, but, you know, some sort of mid-card big mouth going, you know, who do you think you are coming in? Or even like Drew Gulak type. Like, he's about to wrestle. Braun beats him up and then declares his mission. Something like that. Obviously they chose what they did because they want to get Braun over. He's beating up eight guys and it's visually more stimulating. My point is, you pay a price for that. There's a trade-off for that, and I'm not sure it's worth that trade-off. I'm not sure who you want to sacrifice who's backstage in that way, but I'd rather, if he's going to be a babyface, have some heels get in his face to agitate him and prompt him to defend himself or just, you know, knock some sense into them, as opposed to being completely unprovoked, interrupting a match in progress, and including baby faces, including a future potential top-tier star in Montez Ford. Brandon.
Yeah, I understand the sentiment in that none of those four tag teams were necessarily deserving of a tag team title shot, and I agree, and I think that's why the whole premise of the segment sort of falls apart. I don't think that they ever should have booked a four-way number one contenders tag team match with a bunch of teams that had no business being near the tag team titles. I mean, based on the way that tag teams are booked in WWE right now, it seems like the clear next number one contenders would be the Viking Raiders. And of course that doesn't necessarily work because the heel versus heel situation, but like you can get to another team being the challenger to the Usos without doing this and having the whole thing just fall apart on them. I mean, there are a number of ways to reintroduce Braun Strowman that still involve him beating up a bunch of people and coming out on the other end just fine. I think, for example, if you wanted to, you know, officially kill off the 24/7 title, I mean, you could have a bunch of the lower card wrestlers involved with that. You know, one of them steals the title from Dana Brooke, and then they're all kind of brawling in and around the ring. Strowman comes out, he destroys all of them.
Throws them all in a trash bin and the 24/7 title. He locks it, he rolls it out of the arena, he's the number one babyface. Yeah. You walk past Paul Levesque and he's applauding in a little cameo.
I mean, yeah. I'd already be on WWE Shop buying my Braun Strowman merch. Just kidding, I wouldn't do that, but still,
new nickname.
I like
it. I'm 24/7. Braun 24/7 Strowman.
That's an easy way to reintroduce him and do no damage and actually do some good.
Yes, there you have it. We brainstormed our way to an agreement of a better scenario. Thank you, Matt.
I actually liked your idea. Now you sold me on it. And I guess just my point was that, you know, the Usos just got done with the Street Profits. You know, we've seen them against the New Day umpteen times. Los Lotharios aren't really positioned in a way where all of a sudden they're going to get a title shot. And then, you know, Alpha Academy certainly could, but, you know, I hear you about, you know, destroying Montez Ford, and, there are other ways they could have done it. But I guess for me, just the fact that they had that match, and I was like, wait a minute, one of these four teams is going to get it. The fact that somebody, you know, caused it to be a no contest was actually sort of a relief to me as And so to piggyback off of that, with Solo Sikoa causing McIntyre to lose by pulling the ref out, you know, he's going to be a part of the bloodline, I guess, coming up here, and that may spell the end of the honorary Uz Sami Zayn. And we have KO facing Theory tonight. You see KO and Sami Zayn as a tag team down the line that could face the Usos, especially now that Sikoa is back up as another worker for the bloodline. And Sami Zayn probably going to be on the outs there.
Go ahead, Brandon.
Yeah, I have been on the record a couple of times on this post show saying that, and on Twitter as well, saying that one of my biggest hopes in the next couple of months is for a reunion of Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens as baby faces, taking on the Usos for the tag team championships. I think that they can tell an excellent story. I think you can headline shows with it. I think you can turn it into a big main event feud. And I mean, the writing is on the wall here for Sami Zayn to be a really big babyface if they want to go in that direction. Kevin Owens has already reestablished himself as a babyface, and judging by tonight, he was very, very over. I think that if he continues down the path he's been on, cutting the promos that he's cutting, with the energy and fire that he's had, he is going to be one of the top babyfaces on Raw in very, very short order. And I think the fans are ready to cheer Sami Zayn again. I think that putting them together and letting them play off of each other and working against the Usos and Roman Reigns throughout much of the fall would be really, really, really good TV.
All right, go ahead with anything else, Matt.
Yeah, I actually thought that Dexter Lumis, when they showed him halfway out of the bottom of the ring, was actually pretty funny. Like that's one of the few times I laugh out loud when I was by myself. But sticking with the tag team questions, going over to the women's side, I was definitely expecting Dakota Kai to mention that she was not the legal woman, and that to lead to them having a rematch for the tag titles on the women's side. Do you think that this is a way to really cement Raquel and Aaliyah as the champions, or do you think that they just had them win the titles as a swerve that night, and then we're going to see Kai and Sky beat them next week? Because I do think that one way to keep, you know, Aaliyah's basically not been very relevant for a while, but if they win this match here against a seemingly formidable team with Dakota Kai and Io Sky, then that can help her along, help Aaliyah and help Raquel in their ascent there as the tag team champions, and then another team can come along. Where do you see them going with that situation?
Brandon, I'll throw to you first again.
Yeah, I don't love the pairing of Raquel and Aaliyah. I thought that, you know, like most of the other teams in that women's tag team title tournament, they were thrown together, and I get that they really want to get something out of Raquel, and I'm not necessarily super negative on the idea that they eventually could. I just don't think that she's hit yet in any real significant way, and that of course goes for Aaliyah as well, who still looks a little lost out there for the most part. I definitely would like to see the titles on EO and Dakota before too long. They certainly seem like a more solid and formidable pair, and I think that having the titles in a group that is so heavily featured on TV on a week-to-week basis would help the tag team titles. I think the biggest thing with the women's tag team titles, and always has been, is getting them on acts that get regular exposure, because there isn't necessarily time to feature all the women each week, or at least they choose not to feature all the women each week. And so more often than not, you saw the women's tag team titles take a back seat to whatever the main title program was on the given show. And the few times that they have been able to combat that is when they have put them on heavily featured prominent stars. You know, for example, Sasha Banks and Naomi when they were with the company. And when they were, you know, when the titles were on when they were on Asuka for a while, and Kairi Sane, they were, you know, fairly well featured. So I think getting them on Kai and Sky would certainly help elevate the titles, which is something I think needs to be done. And I think that Bayley would be able to talk them up and bring some importance to them. And we know that Bayley has a deep personal connection to those titles, so I think she could have a lot of fun with it.
Do you like the new team name?
It's take it or leave it for me.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes. Matt, anything else you want to ask or follow up on?
Well, I just, to me, like I think I mentioned a couple weeks ago at the house show I was at in Atlantic City, Aaliyah and Raquel were tagging together. They've been tagging together for house shows against Baszler and Rousey. So The only reason why I would want them to keep the titles is so they could drop them to Baszler and Rousey. And then that's a, you know, a pretty prominent act if they were tagging together, which we haven't seen on television yet. But if they were, now that Baszler's done with Liv Morgan, if Baszler and Rousey tagged together and won that, then we'd have a pretty strong tag championship team if they were to drop the belts to them. And then Naomi and Sasha could come back and challenge them, and we'd have a really strong two teams feuding for them. So I don't know. That's pretty much all I got on that.
Yeah.
But other than that, you know, that's really the only reason I would advocate for Raquel and Aaliyah to hang on to them. I would agree with your assessment that Aaliyah looks a little bit lost out there still, but it is what it is, And other than that, I'll let you guys get on to some other stuff. But I appreciate you guys taking my call, and go VIP.
I appreciate it, Brad. Thanks so much, Matt. The idea of Bayley saying, I beat you already, I don't need a title match yet, kind of picking her spot. I can tell from Tony you're not okay with it. I'm actually okay with it because it's sort of the chicken shit heel thing to do. Like, I'll pick my spot when I feel like it's more advantageous for me. And Bianca's, as the babyface challenger, are going, go ahead, bring it on one-on-one. I'll beat you. And Bayley sort of going, I want that title, but I'm not quite ready to do it on your terms. I actually think that's a good twist from just going right to it and having Bayley go, I pinned you, and now I want a match, because it portrays Bayley as hesitant. And so something has to happen where Bayley feels like, maybe they'll just draw this out, where Bianca sort of gets obsessed with it. I really want to prove I can beat Bayley. She's a big star. I haven't beat her yet. She's bragging too much about beating me. Something happens where Bayley goes, yeah, now I want the match, or she's forced into it. I'm still working that through, but I think they're up to something with why they did it that way, Brandon. What do you think?
Yeah, I didn't mind Bayley saying that so much as I did her saying that she had more important things to do. That was kind of where she lost me, because I think it's fine for her to, you know, pull sort of the chicken heel move where she wants to pick her spot and, you know, she has the victory already over Bianca. So the idea in her mind is that she can beat her whenever she wants, but I still don't want the eventual heel challenger to be saying that there are more important things than winning the title. That was my only issue there.
I would have edited that line out
or
augmented it to, there are more pressing matters at the moment, and that's a tag match, you know, and that's a title match that's already scheduled. But obviously, it's just a matter of time, Bianca, before I take that belt. Something along those lines.
And the thing is like the turn of phrase is so common that it wouldn't surprise me at all if like she just said it in the heat of the moment because it made sense within the context of the promo. But like knowing Bayley and how attentive she is, it wouldn't surprise me at all if she watched that back and was like, oh yeah, okay.
Yep, I agree. Okay, let's go to our next call here. And by the way, phone lines are still open. So if you're listening to us and you want to, if you've already called in and you want to push one, you can join the conversation. We'd love to hear from a first-time caller. Don't be nervous. Or someone who I haven't heard from in a while, especially if you want to agree or disagree with something that we've said so far. If you want to call in, 347-215-8558 and push one on your keypad. We'll be by Wednesday night with our Dynamite post show and Friday night with our SmackDown post show. And as noted on the flagship tomorrow, we'll be talking about a lot of things, including the AEW controversy. And I think by later tomorrow, we might even have more information on the situation and the fallout from it. Okay, up next, we'll go to Sean in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Sean, good to hear from you again. What did you think of Raw?
Well, I want to say it's cool to actually get to call on a Monday. Labor Day is like the only Monday I ever get to call on. So it's like, oh, I get to talk about Raw for once and SmackDown every week. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Brandon, it's always good to see. Yeah, it is. So, Brandon, good to talk to you, man. I know you guys had a long weekend, but I wanted to say I appreciate all your coverage. I got to listen to, both roundtables, even though I didn't watch All Out because I didn't have – the money was a little bit of an issue for me. I wanted to, but I knew that I was going to get great coverage from you guys. So getting to hear everything and then going back and actually watching the media scrum and hearing you guys talk about it was great. It was awesome. I'm glad I'm going to get to hear plenty more about it. So that's going to be a lot of fun. But as
you
far as
Sean,
the show,
Sean, Brandon, yeah, I was just about to say you got the real main event.
We're both thinking the same thing. That's funny.
I did, because I went back and listened. Actually what happened was I listened to Zach and Tyler this morning on the YouTube channel. I got in on that for a little – most of the time they were on there. And they started talking about it because I hadn't really gone back to look at the media. And I was like, okay, I got to check this out. And then, actually getting to hear Punk say all that, it was like, wow, okay, this is interesting. Wow, this is pretty cool. But I wanted to go, just going back to the show. I thought it was okay. Brandon, what you were saying, I'm with you on all the tag teams. They had no reason to be buying for a title. But I wanted to go to the main event first because the question I was going to ask you guys is a little bit different as far as I feel like they continue to say, Graves and Saxton continue to say how Lashley is superhuman. Like, they're still building Lashley up. And he's the U.S. champion. He's in an okay spot. But I feel like since he's turned babyface, he's always been, of course, a better heel. I thought when he was with the Hurt Business, he was, a lot better heel. I thought he was portrayed even as a more serious act, and I feel like since he's been babyface, I was okay with it for a while, but the more they're having it, like Miz getting a lot of offense in a lot of times, and I feel like he's gotten a little weaker. Am I way off base on that? How do you think they've portrayed Lashley the last maybe 3 or 4 weeks, and do you think they're on a, since he's, still the U.S. champion, like he's on it, because Miz could have beaten him, like they said, Miz could have won that. Had he not maybe jumped off or done whatever he was going to do? I mean, there was a chance he beat Lashley. And so what do you think they've done with Lashley these last 3 weeks, and do you think they're on a good track with him?
The fact that Miz got an offense, but that was only after he and Ciampa beat up Lashley for, 8 minutes or whatever it was before the match, I think was a sign WWE was cognizant that they wanted to keep Lashley strong. So they had a pre-match beatdown. That one was to fill time, but two, just protect Lashley. I mean, I think it was, Miz is not being portrayed as an actual physical threat to Lashley. Is that what you think they were up to, Brandon?
Yeah, it definitely seemed that way. I mean, from the get-go, when you look at the clock, when that match is about to start, and they've got like 28 minutes left or whatever it was to the broadcast, you're thinking like, man, how is the Miz going to go this long? Granted, commercials in between and whatnot, but how is the Miz going to go this long with Bobby Lashley? And quickly you found out that's how. I mean, they're going to have the pre-match beatdown so that it becomes an even playing field, so to speak. And so I was okay with it in that respect because it sort of they needed a main event, essentially. They needed a competitive main event, and they wanted to protect Lashley So the only way that The Miz could be competitive with someone like Lashley was to get an upper hand before the match with an extra body in there. So that made sense to me. I do think that there's been a little bit of shift in the way that they've presented Lashley in the last several weeks. And I think a lot of that has to do with them positioning him in a way that he's having longer and strong matches. And that sometimes hurts a character's ability to seem superhuman and dominant. I mean, when you have someone like Braun Strowman, for example, who is also presented like a monster and a dominant force, he's not wrestling, you know, multi-segment 15, 20-plus minute U.S. title matches the way that Bobby Lashley has been recently. I mean, Lashley's last feud was going back and forth with Austin Theory, and Lashley got the better of him on multiple occasions, and their last encounter was a borderline squash. I mean, Theory got very minimal offense in. But since then, Lashley's been working with the likes of Tommaso Ciampa and AJ Styles. And now The Miz. And both Ciampa and Styles got in significant amount of offense in long multi-segment matches on Raw. So that change in presentation can be strewn as a positive in the sense that you're getting some good wrestling and you're getting some sort of prestige title defenses for the U.S. title, which I think is important when you're rebuilding a championship and trying to add to its prestige and make it, you know, make it a sought-after championship again. But on the flip side, you do sort of bring Lashley back down to earth a little bit, like Sean is saying.
All right. Sean, back to you.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to, you know, especially the last Miz-Lashley match. You know, Miz got a lot of offense, and it was kind of like, you know, okay, you know, Bobby's okay. I do miss MVP with him. I do miss him. I think that really was a good thing to have with Bobby because Bobby, again, he speaks okay on his own, but he's definitely not the same without a mouthpiece. And so, but I'm curious to see where they go with him. They're still got him in a good spot. But I wanted to hear what you guys thought about the opening segment. Oh, go ahead. Yeah, go ahead, Brandon.
I was just going to add, he's just a little vanilla as a babyface. I mean, he always has been. And I think as much as he's improved over the years, I just think that sort of generic babyface is still there in him. And you know, sometimes you can work it out of him with the right opponent, but when he isn't really involved in anything major, I think it really comes out when he doesn't have anything to really like sink his teeth into and talk about. And when he's, you know, on his own without a mouthpiece, it does just come off a bit vanilla.
Yeah.
I agree.
Go ahead, Sean.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Well, I was gonna. Yeah. Well, as far as the opening statement, I just wanted to ask you guys. You know, my main thing was, did you like Dominic being stoic like he was, and did you, you know, because I actually think the more I look at it and the more I think about it, I think Dominic can be a good heel. But the question I had was, are you leery about that he's going to have an actual match with Edge next week? Because that's a, you know, we're going to see a lot about him in the ring in that match because, I mean, he's going to have to put on a decent match because with Edge, I mean, it's hard not to have a good match, but it's Dominic, so we'll see. So I just want to ask you that perspective too.
I'm not as down on Dominic as you are. I mean, he's not like a polished world-class worker, but, I mean, WWE is about telling stories, and you want to have most people good to excellent in the ring, but you can have some people who – need to be carried and are passable, but are an integral part of telling a story. And I think this is really, first of all, I'll say this is really good use of Ray. I mean, I think Ray's getting to use his acting skills. He's sympathetic. He's not being put in a position to have to be like a credible title challenger at this point in his life, but he has something he's fighting for. He has emotions that he's working through. And I think Dominic is believable as a punk-ass kid who's Breaking Bad. And I think his demeanor being more reserved as opposed to overdoing it with, you know, cartoonish overreactions and facial expressions is the right thing to do, right way to go. I think they're playing this pretty well in terms of the pitch so far. Brandon, I'm curious what you think.
Yeah, I completely agree on the Rey Mysterio front. I think this is a really good use of him, and he's been doing a really, really good job at selling it. I think that the reason that it doesn't feel hokey and completely just cheesy wrestling over the top is because of how good Rey Mysterio has been in selling how hurt he is that Dominic has turned on him. Thumbs up in that regard. I'm a little more reserved on the praise for Dominic thus far. I think that tonight was a good indication that he seems to have a sense of what his strengths and weaknesses are and what he needs to be in order for this to be pulled off, because I do think that there's still a bit of a deer in the headlights with Dominic. When you look at him, he still looks like a kid. So there's something about him that looks like he doesn't belong there. And I think that he's going to have to work pretty hard to overcome that. I think the lack of polish just makes him look like he belongs, you know, in training or at the very best in NXT and not instead on the main roster. So I just think that as he grows a little bit older and hones in his look a little bit and grows into his body a little bit more, I think that he'll come along nicely. But like I said, I do think that he seems to have a grasp on his strengths and weaknesses, and I thought tonight was good overall. I thought that his body language was strong for the most part. I do like the fact that they are playing into the subservient angle to Rhea Ripley, because people are enamored with that, and I think that they find it entertaining. And yes, there's a lot of jokes to be made, and that, you know, they're certainly being made ad nauseum on Twitter. And WWE is leaning into it to a certain extent, but they're doing it in a way that still works within the context of the storyline. So, yeah, I mean, as down as I have been on the Judgment Day in general, I like this first chapter for Dominic tonight.
I think Dominic is someone who, if he didn't have the storyline of the family with Rey, it's like, hey, go to NXT, earn your spot. You know,
absolutely, like, yeah.
Okay, absolutely. And I don't think that egregious that he's getting the TV time he's getting, because he's not getting an Eric Watts push from Bill Watts. This isn't just like, you know, shoving somebody who's the son of a promoter in that way. I mean, I think he's kind of in a spot where it is kind of a question whether he belongs, and he is riding Ray's coattails, and there could be heat on Ray for bringing Dominic up, but Ray's just so nice, and Dominic, I think, hits that minimum threshold of being good enough that I just think fans are like, yeah, let's cheer for this guy. He's the son of this legend. I'm overall okay with it, but I also think the look he has and the demeanor he has works as a heel when he's part of a faction with this strong female figure that he may or may not be smitten with. She may not be into him. She said, I turned him into a man. So I think that adds an interesting dynamic. And the fact that he's sort of baby-faced in his mid-20s, or his early 20s, I should say, adds to the idea that he doesn't look like he's like, it seems like he's being manipulated and going against the grain of what he should be. Like
he's impressionable.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That he's impressionable and he's being let. He overreacted immaturely to maybe a bit of a mistake or an oversight by Edge and Ray in terms of celebrating off to the side, not actively including him, especially because he helped them win. And his body language suggested, "Hey, I'm here. Hello, I'm your son." And so there was just enough where you could believe he had rationalized. You know what? I'm getting the attention I want from the Judgment Day, and I'm getting ignored by this longtime friend of my dad. Screw them. I'm going to go prove myself. And it even fits the idea that everyone says, oh, he only belongs because he's Ray's son. And now the storyline is he's like, hey, look, these guys think I'm valuable. This validates me. Yeah. All right. John, back to you.
Yeah. I wanted to say, you know, just going back to the women's, you know, if they do, I'm with you guys as far as – I think they have to put the women's tag titles, at least for now, on Io and Dakota, because I just – like I said, Aaliyah just doesn't do it for me. I just her pinning someone, no matter what, to win a title right now, I thought was just crazy. I thought it was just the wrong move, and I think they've got to get away from that because Dakota and Io have good heat right now. They need to get it on them and push them. And then the last thing I wanted to quick say is I'm excited, man, for – Gargano to get back in the ring next week. I've been you know, of course, we've been all missing him for a while. And so, you know, it's going to be just good to see him back in our WWE ring and kind of show the main, you know, core of people what he can do, 2 million people what he can do. And so I'm really excited for that. So I'm glad to see him back out there. And then, Wade, like I said, I'm excited to hear all your coverage this week. I appreciate all you've done this weekend. I know you guys were tired. It was a long, long weekend. And I'm just glad to be, like I said, pro wrestling is just in a great spot right now. And, Wade, you're the man. Brandon, always good to talk to you. Thank you guys for taking my call, as always.
Cool. Thanks, Sean. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
All right. Up next, we'll go to Ryan in Cumberland, Maryland. Ryan, what have you got for us?
My first question is on Rey Mysterio. It's what happened tonight leading to possibly a hair versus mask match between Rey and Dominik at WrestleMania next year.
That's looking pretty far out, but I mean, Dominik's got a full head of hair. I don't know, like, I don't think people would care enough about Dominik being bald unless that sort of became a thing, like Rhea Ripley. Running her hand through his hair, and you know, like that becomes a thing, or you know, in some other way, he grows it out and spikes it and colors it like some rebellious punk, you know, teenager or something. I don't know. I just don't think his hair is like super identified with him, and but I think everyone would know he was going to lose because I mean, Rey has obviously wrestled maskless, and you can find pictures of him online, and he walks around backstage. Last time I saw him, he was without his mask, walking around backstage. You know, Excalibur doesn't do that, but Rey does. So anyway, I was thinking of other examples. So I don't think that's like strikes me as a big money match, but Rey versus Dominik at WrestleMania would be something. Brandon, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, they definitely are going to get to that match, you would think, at some point. I mean, I don't think you have Dominik turn on Rey without doing that at some point. I would assume that they probably don't go the route of hair versus mask, only because, to me, I mean, maybe I'm wrong here. Maybe WWE would put the kibosh to it because they view Rey still as the much bigger commodity. I guess it depends on how they feel about Dominik long term. But I could certainly see Rey pitching a match with Dominik where he puts his son over. So I don't know in that respect because, again, Wade, like you said, I don't necessarily foresee Rey ditching the mask. So I don't necessarily think they'll go in that direction, but I do think that we are in line for that match at some point.
All right, Ryan, what's up? What's number two on your list?
My second question is on Braun Strowman. You know, if WWE had to buy out his contract from Control Your Narrative, or if Braun had any sort of, like, I thought maybe he was the partner of EC3 for a little while, so you have any information on that federation that's supposed to be, like, a big deal this year?
I don't, and I haven't seen reporting on that. Brandon, any idea on your end? I mean, I doubt it would take much to buy Braun.
Yeah. I haven't seen anything. I can't imagine that there was much of anything. And given that they also brought Karrion Kross back, I mean, I maybe it was a 2-for-1 deal. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. Or maybe EC3 is showing up soon, and they're all going to be in a faction. Who knows? All right, what else, Ryan?
And my final question is on Sheamus and that reaction he got at Clash of the Castle after losing to Walter, well, it's not his name now, but that's what I like to call him. But my question is that compared to what Chris Benoit got when he lost to Kurt Angle at the Royal Rumble, or do you think it didn't quite go to that level of reaction?
I would have to rewatch that to get any sense of comparing the two. But I thought it was noteworthy, Brandon, that they featured it. You know, like they were showing a lot of just freeze frames of what happened at the event, but they went with that Sheamus ovation, and I, you know, they didn't have to do that. And I wonder if that was for a reason, if they're going to actually try to, you know, have him be a babyface worldwide after this.
Yeah. You know, that comparison isn't something that I've thought of often, just because I don't revisit the, you know, Chris Benoit matches frequently or at all, but I have a unique perspective in that I was there. I was in Boston for that match, and that honestly, still to this day, I mean, one of my favorite memories, of course it is tainted now to some extent, but one of my favorite memories of, you know, live wrestling. I actually, this is a small tangent, but two of my fondest live wrestling memories, unfortunately, involve Chris Benoit. I was both at the Royal Rumble in 2003 for that match with Kurt Angle, and I was at WrestleMania 20. So I have both of those huge, huge moments that now have to, you know, they mean something different, unfortunately. But yeah, I mean, I could see that comparison being apt. I mean, that was a huge moment at the time. I remember looking around the arena and just being sort of floored by everyone just standing at full attention and showing respect for not only Benoit, but just how incredibly good that match was and how engaged the crowd was from start to finish. They really had them in the palm of their hand. And I don't necessarily think it's entirely unlike the Gunther and Sheamus match. I mean, granted, I think that they had the advantage of that match taking place where it did, and I think WWE was wise and strategic to book it there, but they can carry that momentum elsewhere. And given that they featured it in its own segment tonight, even when Sheamus is a SmackDown guy, that says to me that they were really proud of that moment and that, yeah, they do intend to run with Sheamus as a babyface, and I think that's the right move.
Ryan, anything else?
The only thing I can add is to Rey Mysterio could possibly be a career against hair match instead of the mask being on the line. That's just a thought.
Sure, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I career versus hair, then I think it's maybe more believable that Rey might lose if he was thinking of retiring and Dominic's, you know, would have heat for doing that.
Yeah.
That would work in his favor, and people might think that could happen, but, you know, especially if Dominic makes a big deal out of his hair being a big part of his identity, then, you know, that would make it seem like, you know, something really was at stake for him. Cool. Ryan, good to hear from you. Thanks.
Thanks for taking the call.
Of course. All right, our phone lines are still open if you want to join us, 347-215-8558. I want to get to some emails first before we get back to any calls. Let's see. I don't want to do that. First, I want to go to this actually wasn't super related to Raw, but it was kind of interesting. And I had marked this. Al in New York City said that Triple H referred to NXT at one point as WWE's third international brand. But in discussing NXT going head-to-head with AEW, Triple H wanted it both ways because he said AEW beat WWE's developmental, as if you didn't really beat WWE, you beat our developmental. So, you know, we're picking on Triple H a little bit tonight over a couple, you know, maybe some things that seemed like a step back or just disappointing to us. But, yeah, that was a little bit of wanting it both ways when it, you know, I don't want NXT to be developmental. It's a third brand. And then it's like, oh, but we beat you. Oh, yeah, but it was developmental.
Yeah, there's undoubtedly some hypocrisy there. I listened to or watched some of and listened to the rest of the Triple H interview with Ariel Helwani, and I came away with a pretty strong appreciation for Triple H. I mean, like, yes, there is undoubtedly some hypocrisy in the way that he compares AEW to NXT and sort of tries to flippantly dismiss AEW without outwardly taking a shot at them. But I think it's just basic promoter stuff. I mean, I think it's just the competitor. It's just the businessman in him. I just don't see the harm in it outside of you know, giving fodder for people to point out the obvious hypocrisy. I don't think he's necessarily hurting anybody or hurting anything by doing it, so it doesn't bother me a ton. But yeah, I mean, undoubtedly, it's hypocritical. I think a lot of what Triple H has said over time about NXT and about that time period going head to head with AEW is hypocritical. And of course, we got plenty of Tony Khan insinuating as such last night.
All right. Up next, Zach in Texas. I haven't been able to watch much of Raw because I've been on a Labor Day trip out of town with family. I did see the opening segment, though. Rhea says she made Dominic a man. I guess it's official then. Rhea's a dominatrix, and Dominic is her submissive. I fully expect her to come out next week with a riding crop, and she tells him and she hits him with it to motivate him into action. Certainly the most interesting Dom's ever been, even though it has nothing to do with him. So compliment taken away. I don't know if it necessarily has to be a Dom sub relationship. I think Rhea could just be, you know, an alpha in the dynamic as the older person in the couple. And, you know, also just coming across as manipulative because, well, maybe she's into Dominic. She's even more into the psychological price that Rey is paying for it. And also therefore Edge, you know, because of the resentment of Edge. That, you know, because of everything that happened with Edge, now Dominic and Rey are broken up. So, but, you know, I wouldn't rule out. I mean, it could go that direction, especially, you know, under Levesque. I could imagine him going, hey, that'd be a neat thing to add.
I think they're just going to tease it. I think it's going to be there for the people who want to see it, but they're never going to outwardly acknowledge it. I mean, they're obviously clued in to what people were saying on Twitter and on social media, because it did gain quite a bit of traction and has been gaining traction over the course of the last few weeks, enough so that each time they're on screen together, they lean into it a little bit. And I think Rhea herself has leaned into it quite a bit on Twitter. So they're certainly aware of it. And I think it's going to be one of those things where it's sort of a dog whistle that's there for the people that are aware, and for those who don't follow along or are, you know, younger members of the audience, they'll just take it at face value.
All right. Up next, let's see. Okay. We'll do Ed in High Desert, California's email here. Way to Brandon. I would have preferred Edge to come out, say he will leave Dominic up to Rey, let him sort it out. Normally he would knock the guy around, but due to his friendship, etc. I just want Edge to move past Judgment Day. It's dragging. They could have also still had Rhea come out and say, Edge, you don't have a choice, but I'm still cold on Judgment Day. So a pause there. He's got more to say about Judgment Day and Rey in a second here, but the idea that Dominic wanted to beat up, or that Edge wanted to beat up Dominic and Rey said, don't, you know, let me deal with it my way. Did you like that? Because, I mean, Edge is like, hey, you used to be a little kid, but you're your own man now. And what's he say? A man's something deserves man's punishment? Something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, I forget the exact line. It wasn't a terrible line or anything. I just wasn't
a man's game plays a man pays a man's price.
Yeah,
That's, I mean, so I was fine with it, but you know, had he said out of deference to you, Rey, I'm gonna, you know, I don't want to beat up Dominic, and then Ray's like, no, go beat him up. I don't want to beat my own son. But he needs a lesson, Todd. I mean, I could have lived with that too. So
yeah, I wasn't. You know, it wasn't a huge deal to me either way, but I do, generally speaking, agree with the sentiment of getting Edge away from the Judgment Day. I think that their identity has been so wrapped up in Edge, given that he created the stable, and the fact that Edge has more or less dominated them in every competition, you know, competitive match they've had thus far. I would like to see Edge move on to something else, and I thought that there was a chance that was coming, because you know, until Judgment Day came out with tonight, we didn't know that Dominic was necessarily part of the Judgment Day. I mean, he still helped Edge and Rey win. He left on his own accord. He attacked them afterward. Yes, we got the Judgment Day laughing, but to me, that wasn't the ultimate signal that he had joined the group, but rather they were just really pleased that he finally turned on Rey Mysterio and that they may have had something to do with it. So there was a brief moment there where I thought that maybe Edge was going to attempt to get his revenge on Dom and then move on. But then obviously we find out that Dominic is working with Judgment Day now, and so that seems to indicate that this will continue. And I do hope that it's over before too long, because, yeah, I just think there's better uses of Edge, and I'd like to see them go their separate ways and for Judgment Day to stand on their own.
People should just plug their ears for this, but if they do the Dom sub thing with Rhea Ripley, is his identity changed to Dom the sub? Or Subinic? I don't know. Anyway, all right. Thanks for laughing. All right, Ed continues. In Ray versus Priest, why not just let Priest have a clean win? Let Ray be distracted by the Dominic issue. It just seems Judgment Day is still weak. Also, I'd have preferred Ray have kicked Dominic instead of stopping. When he gets asked, he says he was hoping to knock some sense into him, but he wants to make adult decisions. He gets adult reactions. Have Ray say, I'm going to give that kid the butt whipping he has earned now. Any thoughts?
I like the route they're taking with Ray. I think that not having the father come to immediate blows with his son, even though his son has done him wrong and turned his back on him, is more believable than the son clotheslining the father, so now father and son are in a blood feud. I like the nuance there. I think that it is a subversion of what you would typically expect out of an angle like this in pro wrestling. And so I like that it is seemingly going to take a lot more for Ray to get physical with Dominic.
Yep. Okay. Then he says, it's ridiculous the Lashley-Miz match still occurred. That wasn't a simple attack. It makes no sense under any circumstances any official let the match start. At the very least, Lashley should have been checked out by medical in the back. Yeah, I mean, I'm with him on that. I think WWE could have done more to make that make some sense.
Yeah, I mean, we saw it with Christian and Jungle Boy as well. I mean,
yeah.
same kind of deal. It happened a couple times this weekend, and
the ref asked Jungle Boy.
Oh yeah, yeah, sure.
You know, I mean, like, and gave him time to stand up and say, yes, I want to fight. And I mean, Lashley didn't get that courtesy.
Right, right.
Lastly, while there's been some more chirping regarding the world title on Raw, there's been very little. No number one contender match, no forceful challenges or call-outs. There's two titles. It really feels like they're just running off the clock as much as they can. While WWE can do anything they want, the idea this goes on for 6 to 8 more months is mind-boggling. Having Reigns lose one title, whether he's pinned or someone else is pinned, also doesn't sit well. I think WWE missed the opportunity with Drew. By the way, Drew's on the list. Why care about him? Don't want to hear anything about him after his hey, let's party. And true last point, when Theory finally cashes in, he'll win the title by being knocked out and being placed on his opponent. That has to be, because he keeps getting dropped before. Thanks for all the content. Looking forward to hearing all the extra shows about that AEW press conference fallout. Thanks, Ed. Anything you want to add to any of that?
I would just say that if they're serious about pulling the trigger on Austin Theory winning the title at any point during his run, they really need to get serious about making him more than a loser. I mean, I know that it's par for the course with the way WWE books that they typically send the money in the bank holder on a losing streak so that it's more shocking and surprising when they cash in and win the title. But I mean, these are not ordinary times with paper world champions. I mean, it's Roman Reigns with a 2+ year title run, and it seems like it's going to be Roman Reigns for the foreseeable future. So even if, you know, you finally take the title off of Reigns at, say, WrestleMania, that only gives you 2 months where Austin Theory can conceivably cash in. So, yeah, I mean, I just think there's a lot of work to do with him before it will make any sense for him to win that title. So, you know, if it's my decision, I mean, at this point where Theory is at, I have him cash in and lose.
All right, let's wrap up with this. Sean from Murfreesboro, Tennessee, emailed back, said he thought of one more thing. I forgot to ask about the women's tag division. Do you guys have any hope that there is a good trajectory for Piper Niven at all? She hasn't won in forever. This tag team with Nikki hasn't helped either one, and I really like her in the ring and on the mic. I just wanted to hear your thoughts. Go VIP, everyone. We keep waiting, right, Brandon, for something. They've been arguing in the background. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't know if you caught it tonight. I only did because I was on the lookout for Dexter Lumis, because he's been appearing so frequently in the shadows. But Nikki A.S.H. Took off her mask and threw it at Doudrop when Bailey and company were walking down the hallway tonight. So they've got something in the works there. I've really liked that aspect of Triple H's booking, scattering little pieces of story backstage and giving clues. I mean, they even clued to Braun Strowman tonight before we saw him. I mean, Miz and Ciampa saw the overturned vehicle and assumed it was Dexter Lumis, but I mean, my assumption was certainly that it was meant to be Braun Strowman. So they do little clues, and little Easter eggs for people that are paying close attention. And if you're not paying close attention and you happen to miss it, it doesn't really impact, your understanding or enjoyment of the show, but it just little bits of immersion, I think are neat and definitely really helpful. One other thing I would add, to that, just the idea of immersion. This is not something that I caught, by the way, but something I happened to scroll past on Twitter. Yeah. There was a moment tonight where there was a person dressed in a full Ghostface Killer costume in the crowd. And someone, I think, astutely pointed out that Indy Hartwell has dressed that way in NXT before. The only reason I think that it may have been an Easter egg is because I can't imagine that security would have allowed a ghost face mask through the gate. So that says to me that that was a plant.
Although it could also be MJF.
It's leaving early.
Yeah. All right, Brandon, tell people how they can follow you on Twitter.
Yeah, you can follow me at BLeClaire12 on Twitter. I have been very active this weekend covering both major events for PW Torch and of course talking about the CM Punk drama from last night and all the other stuff. You know, the CM Punk news was so big that Lost and all that was all the weird stuff with Swerve Strickland and Keith Lee, and then the stuff from Tony Storm, and then Tony Khan absolutely losing it at the end of the press conference. So there's just so much. I feel like I've already watched the Punk segment twice, and like I feel like I could again and pick up more stuff.
Yep,
like
yep.
there's so much going on there. So yeah, been talking about that plenty. I will certainly be talking plenty of football in the weeks ahead. I get my favorite birthday present each year, which is that the NFL kicks off right around my birthday. This year happens to be on my birthday, so we get the opening game on my birthday itself. And if you're a music person, I will probably be sharing some pictures because I will be attending two nights this week at TD Garden in Boston of My Chemical Romance. So it is a tour that I have been looking forward to for 3 years. It's been postponed three times. So I've had tickets to the first date since before COVID, if you can believe. Yeah, so pretty crazy. Shows are finally happening. It was quite funny because Edge made reference to the tour, a very timely reference a couple of weeks ago, and that popped me. So yeah, lots going on, and a lot in the wrestling world and a lot elsewhere as well.
I was supposed to see Duran Duran a few weeks ago at an outdoor show, and there's lightning. And they waited like 4 hours and then finally had to cancel it.
Ugh.
And then it was a short tour in the U.S. And there was like one pocket of time of space in between a few 2 days off in between dates, and geographically it was possible. Like they might reschedule like around this. It might have been tonight. Actually.
Right.
Which would have been a bad time to go with everything going on. But then they just said, no, we had to cancel refunds, and I'm bummed out. I wanted to. Want to see them.
Yeah, it's always it's a strange tour routing. Tour routing is a really tough animal. It's something that I've looked into a lot before and studied a little bit, and it is odd the way that they sometimes will book tours and travel to cities, you know, in order that you think would be really counterproductive, but actually make sense in some way that when they crunch the numbers, and then trying to do makeup dates, like tacking on shows at the end of tours, can sometimes be an expense that just isn't worth it.
Yeah. All right, Brandon, thanks. It's been a blast.
Yeah, definitely. Always always happy to do this, and certainly a newsworthy time. And, yeah, always fun.
Cool. Go VIP. if you want to hear more on everything else going on, pwtorch.com/govip. Thanks, everybody.